Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho. Now this is episode 57 for August 17th. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald bring you the news today. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Bank CDA. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local, you want flexible, you want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com.
Josh, it is a good day today.
It's raining.
It's raining. You and I spoke about this before because we both went through schools where there was white fluorescent lighting and gray walls. And there's something calming about a cloudy, semi-darker day. Not a bright cloudy day. It's going to be kind of darker.
So it seems like the light. So we have skylights, and that might be the next part. We have skylights in our office. They're not like your normal skylights. They're like these weird
cloudy.
Yeah, they're like a white, but they're
fogged over, yeah. So not a lot. You can't see out of them. Yeah. Anything.
And when it's really sunny out, these put out enough light that you don't have to have the lights on. Mm. And when it's sunny out and they're putting the light through them and then you turn the lights on, it becomes like unbearable. Mm. Like it's too much light. We have desk lights, we have lamps, stuff like that. It becomes unbearably bright. Mm-hmm. But when you turn it off, or when the sun is down and you turn these lights on and all you're getting through the sunlight is like that dark gray, and it's like the only thing that's keeping the light going is the fluorescent light.
Yeah, it's like dimmer than a nightlight.
Yeah.
Because it'd be really dark in here if we didn't have these lights on.
Yeah.
It's a rare occasion. So right now we have our normal office lights on, and it's a rare occasion. We don't normally do that.
Yeah.
But I do like it. There's something calming and relaxing about it.
Which is really weird.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's strange. Maybe it's just something that's left over from... I just remember, you know, you sit in like English class or something, you stare out the window, and it's just dark enough to where like the inside is lit more than the outside. And that's just kind of a unique situation.
Something comforting about that.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of comforting stuff, the rain is also helping out the massive fire issue that we have
everywhere.
Had yesterday. Yeah, I mean, everywhere.
I would assume those up in
Trestle Creek
and the little fire that was, I guess, burning down in the Plummer area yesterday.
Yep.
And obviously our character complex with the Deceitful Fire. Mm-hmm.
That one had a... Well, we'll get to that later on.
Yeah. But it's raining.
It is.
Quite hard, actually.
I think everybody's happy with it. I'm happy with the lower temperatures. I'm actually wearing a light sweatshirt today, which is cool.
I probably should have worn one, and now I'm soaking wet.
Yeah, we actually... Those days where breaking news happens right outside of the news press office, there was a wreck outside that we went outside and covered for a second.
Yeah. And it's coming down pretty good. Mm-hmm. I think I even saw some flash flood warnings for the northern counties.
Mm-hmm. Boundary.
I don't think those extended down into our neck of the woods, no. But you and I were talking about it as we were walking back.
Water was moving pretty good on the street.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost street level and it was moving pretty quick, mm-hmm. and it was bringing a bunch of sediment and crap with it, which... Yep.
Around here is not a good thing.
Which is, yeah, that's the recipe around here for a flash flood, especially on this end of the valley. We're not as lucky as Kellogg is, where mm-hmm. we have a 25-foot deep channel
sure.
for the river to flow through. The river is pretty much just ground level,
right?
Just on the other side of the freeway.
Right. So. And Post Falls and Coeur d'Alene, they generally don't, it doesn't really mess with anything really. Everything, all the water systems there are pretty set up. The lake just gets a little bigger.
All of the water systems in Cooney County right now are probably top of the line from all of the new development.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're even.
I remember, yeah. I mean, I spent a lot of my life in Post Falls, and I just don't remember. You know, every once in a while, you get that one like area where the drain is plugged or something, and you get like a big puddle or something, but nothing major.
That's what I'm a little worried about around here.
Oh, yeah, here in the valley.
Garbage and debris and mm-hmm. dirt and mm-hmm. lawn trimmings, and very much like the guy that lives at home with the bunch of girls with all the long hair.
Yeah.
Every now and again, that drain gets full of
sure.
grass and hair do pretty much the same
thing. I want to preface this. But even when this rain, even if it goes for the rest of the day or maybe even into tomorrow, which the weather forecast looks like it will, that is not an excuse to go burn things. This is not a good time to go burn. There are still fire restrictions in effect. I only bring this up because Madison and I talked about this. Somebody thought it was okay after like one cool day to start a slash pile, and it started a wildfire up north that they took care of. But I believe that was in Bonner's Ferry around the area. But yeah, it's not, one day of rain does not offset months of drought-like conditions. Please don't go burn anything. It's not smart, and we don't need that.
Right.
But thankfully, looking at the 10-day forecast, it looks like temperatures are going down, and we should be getting some rain. Unfortunately, probably coupled with lightning, but
right.
That's something we're just going to have to look out for, I guess. Smoke conditions might get better too.
Yeah, air quality. I mean, air quality right now, let's just take a quick glance in the Osborne area. It says our air quality right now is 154, which I guess I didn't realize it had gotten that high, even with the rain. But then shift over to Coeur d'Alene and it's at 56. Now, Coeur d'Alene doesn't have a fire burning right next to it, mm-hmm. like we do, which right. probably isn't helping matters.
They've been hit with the smoke, though.
They've been hit with the smoke, but they're also less mountains, wide open spaces. If the skies are even remotely clear, the smoke has a way to get up and out.
Mm. That makes sense.
But air quality-wise, and then you like go a little bit further, Spokane, and their quality, they have clear, sunny skies right now. It's 70 degrees
in Spokane. That's pretty good.
That's weird.
That's pretty good.
Spokane is as nice as it is.
Usually around this time of the year, the areas that are always hit the most are the Palouse area.
It looks like our lightning storm isn't supposed to roll until Saturday, too. That's nice. So as long as we can maintain these cooler temperatures and it doesn't dry out what's being done right now, mm-hmm. if we can stay wet and damp for the next 4 days, that will... that's the recipe for firefighters to really get on top of this stuff. That might require some round-the-clock work, but I think it might be worth it in the long haul if they agree. Want to try and get off that fire.
Yeah, I agree.
I wouldn't be surprised to see Chris Littlejohn out there fighting it, shovel in a bucket.
Old Chris Littlejohn from the Bedroom Gold Mine up in Murray. Up in
Murray, trying to make sure Molly B. Damn Days happens.
For those who are unfamiliar, that's Murray's pretty much one festival of the year that they do up there.
I don't know. They got the Dwarfinators wrestling, and I almost said the M word. They don't go by the M word anymore.
I don't think it's a derogatory term.
It is.
It is?
Yes. Dwarf is apparently the preferred vernacular.
Okay, I'm not going to get in on that because I for some reason I think that's worse.
I do too.
I think that's way worse.
I picture little dudes in a mine.
Yeah.
Singing hi ho.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
And Snow White.
Yeah. And them being completely predicated on their personalities being completely predicated on what their name is. Like, "Oh, hey, Grumpy."
We don't make the rules, Josh.
We don't make the rules.
And it is unfortunate because, again, like I said, I feel like that's way more derogatory.
But I don't
whatever.
Think, I don't know. Like if maybe that's for another podcast, comparing and contrasting what is more offensive seemingly, dwarf or the M word. But I'm not going to say the M word.
I'm glad you prefaced with the M word because I would have just said it. I didn't know that that had been canceled.
They changed their name from Extreme M Word Wrestling to the Extreme Dwarfinators.
Okay.
I'm assuming because they're trying to encourage.
I was going to say, we literally wrote a story 2 years ago about the Extreme Midget Wrestling.
Ah, you used the M word.
I know, but I can't. It's just, I can't. Bring it into we literally wrote about it 2 years ago.
They actually prefer little people, which
makes sense.
Even worse,
it sounds condescending.
Yes, like, well, you think you're a big man? No, I'm actually a little person. Like that seems like dwarf is like a, hey, this is, but what they suffer from there is dwarfism,
right?
So like maybe that's why it's okay.
Okay, Josh, for our next interview, I want you to call up your favorite dwarf wrestler. What's his name, Josh?
Hornswoggle?
No, from the first year.
Oh, are you talking about my favorite dwarf wrestler in general?
Yes.
Or the specifically one that came to Murray?
The one that was at Murray.
I will not be calling Lil Pecker up.
You won't be calling Lil Pecker up?
Lil Pecker will not be... I will not be interviewing Lil Pecker because I would not be able to keep myself together.
The things that the way that we create loopholes on this show to say bad words is truly masterful.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
Clint is listening to this right now and shaking his head.
Probably. I mean, he laughed at the drag.
He did game, laugh so. At the drag show.
Yeah. So maybe we'll organize a cage match between Lil Pecker and Misty Box.
And Ida nailed her.
Ida nailed her mm-hmm. as the special guest referee.
That would be a very cool special event wrestling match.
Dear Lord.
What?
As a professional wrestling fan, I cannot say that I would tune in.
No?
But I know people would.
Oh, yeah.
There's absolutely. Enough odd people out there that'll tune in to watch a drag queen take on a dwarf and a...
It would have to be multiple dwarfs. Like from that 70s show where Dwayne The Rock Johnson takes on
like an entire 50 pack of them. Of dwarfs. Yeah. 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 That would be
I'd pay money to see that.
I would create a dwarf faction and call them something sweet like the Shire.
Again, going back to dwarf being worse than midget, in my opinion.
Well, it's not like we're calling them outright hobbits. But
no, we're not. But
in the office, when Dwight looks at the guy in the club, and he's like, you resemble a Tolkien character. And then Ryan's like, yeah, he's a regular accounting wizard. No, not a wizard. A hobbit.
Okay, I really feel like we need to reach out to the dwarf wrestlers right now, and we need to get somebody on the show.
Yeah, maybe.
That would be fantastic. Are they coming back?
I mean, Chris Littlejohn said that he's going to have him back again next year.
Perfect.
But he's planning to not be the owner of the Bedroom Gold Mine if everything goes right. He's trying to sell it. So, but it's one of the things that like one of the events that the people who he thought were interested in buying it were most interested in because it's
definitely a unique event.
It's a make it rain event.
I'm all about. Just talking about North Idaho in general, I love unique events because you and I have the podcast is already quite clear on its anti-parade stance.
Oh, gross.
Because on top of just their nature of them, and everybody does them.
Take your parades and leave. Okay.
But I appreciate when people do something unique. The first thing comes to mind for North Idaho entirely because they do events all over the panhandle, the lawnmower races. Yes. I think that's very clever.
Yes.
I think that's very fun. I've been to at least two of them in two different locations, one in Spirit Lake and one
in Smelterville.
So I think those are really cool and unique. I love lumberjack days, like the lumberjack competitions. I think that's super cool.
That's why you're such a stand for the mining competition too.
We have a mining competition here in the Silver Valley, and it is totally underrated.
You know, I will say I wish the Huckleberry Festival was more Huckleberry themed.
Yeah,
I mean they throw in like the Huckleberry pancakes,
sure.
And then like they canceled the pie eating contest, but I don't even know if it was a Huckleberry pie eating contest
because I think it is.
That seems like an incredibly expensive pie eating contest when those things sell for like $70 a pound.
Say normally under normal circumstances you can find huckleberries, but apparently it's been rough pickings this year.
Right. So I do enjoy. Back in the day, we used to have Noah Kellogg days.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, it was kind of cool.
I've heard about this. But even going back over to the over the hill, you know, Post Falls, I grew up, we go into Post Falls days.
Which one has Frontier Days?
Frontier Days is Smelterville.
Was that who it was?
It was. Smelterville, Pinehurst, kind of. Yeah. Like where they did the rodeo.
And Pinehurst Days has the Burnouts.
Right.
Which
at Sandpoint, I appreciate their big music festival. That's always really cool. It's fairly unique in the sense that it's not just, you know, some live bands coming out. They're headline acts that come out.
I do appreciate the Gyro Ball and Gyro Days.
Yes.
As kitschy as it is, we're definitely suckers for locally themed events.
Yes. Art on the Green in Coeur d'Alene.
Art on the Green is fantastic.
I love Art on the Green. It's definitely something that's underrated. It's not underrated anymore, but.
They make wine slushies.
Do they really?
Art on the Green.
Huh.
And if you've never had a rosé slushy, you're missing out.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Oh, boy.
I dig it. All right. Time to probably move into some news, huh, Josh?
Maybe.
All right. Let's go into it. But first,
Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the United States, responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, please visit hecla-mining.com.
Thanks. I had last Friday's script pulled up. I was about to read Mad Bomber.
Oh, little personal plug. I see.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't.
Yeah. Never heard of the place.
Never heard of it. Never been there before either. Okay. Moving into Coeur d'Alene Post Press headlines for Saturday, August 14th. This place built me. This is by Bill Bewley. It's estimated about 2 million people have called Idaho home since 1985, the year the Idaho Hall of Fame was founded. Fewer than 200 have been inducted into that nonprofit, and for good reason. Quote, it's very high criteria for that Hall of Fame has, said board member Tony Stewart. Our criteria is so high, we've only inducted 198 people. Seven more joined the exclusive group during an hour-long program at North Idaho College on Friday, attended by about 50 people. Each received praise and a plaque in honor of their contributions for making an impact, quote, in their communities, the state, the nation, and in many cases, the world. The inductees include Dr. Jack Riggs, Medicine and Public Service, the late Bill Wasmuth, Religion and Human Rights, Mike and Shola Patrick, Journalism, Free Press, and Speech, Bruce Reed, National Government Public Service, Christy Wood, Human Rights and Public Service, Robert Singletary, History and the Humanities. They join the likes of baseball great Harmon Killebrew, Chief Joseph, former Idaho Governor Phil Batt, and Barbara Morgan, former astronaut. Well, that's cool. I didn't know that.
That is cool.
Reed, a Coeur d'Alene High graduate, Rhodes Scholar, and Deputy Chief of the Staff for President Joe Biden, called it a great honor. Quote, I'm humbled to join such a distinguished group, he said. He said that he considered himself the luckiest man on earth to have grown up in North Idaho, the son of the late Bruce Reed and Mary Lou Reed, who was in the audience. Both, he said, were great role models who fought a lifetime of uphill battles. Christy Wood, a retired police sergeant, a member of the North Idaho College Board and the Coeur d'Alene City Council, has given 26 years to the education of youth and adults. She said she is grateful, quote, for the opportunity to walk among the giants in Idaho history and present. That's very cool. And congratulations to our own Mike and Shola.
That Patrick. Is cool.
Yeah.
Also in that edition, Buzzing Through the West. This is by Hannah Neff. 5,000 miles, 3 months, 2 guys, 1 RV. Why? To share their products and raise awareness of the beekeeping industry.
Sounds like a pitch for a TV show.
Two guys are growing a pizza place or whatever that show is. Jeff Brighton, a manager for Honey Gardens, a bee company in Utah, said the journey is a bit of a tribute to beekeepers. Quote, we want to do it in a fun way that kind of honors what beekeepers do, Brighton said Friday. Beekeepers are kind of migratory. They travel with their bees, and so it's pretty normal for beekeepers to live out of an RV for at least part of the year. John Brightonson, manager of Natural Grocers, said the store invited the travelers to set up out front Friday as part of its 3-day sale event to celebrate the 66th anniversary of the store and birthday of late co-founder Margaret Isley. With Honey Gardens being one of its largest vendors in the supplements department, Brightonson said the timing worked out perfectly. Quote, their products are amazing, Brightonson said, adding that he especially likes Honey Garden elderberry syrup. Quote, it's amazing for what it does for you. I swear by this. Elderberry syrup is dope, by the way.
I'll have to try.
If you have not dabbled.
I have not.
Brighton said one issue he hopes the tour will bring to light is the importance of bees in agriculture and the decline of beekeeping in the United States. Quote, it's getting increasingly difficult for beekeepers to make a living keeping bees, Brighton said. There's many challenges that beekeepers face. According to the USDA National Agricultural Statistics Service survey.
Nice work.
The number of managed honeybee colonies has decreased from 5 million to about 2.66 million in the last 80 years. Brighton pinpointed 3 key factors to the decline as poor nutrition, use of pesticides in agriculture, and newly introduced pathogens and parasites. Quote, 2/3 of the produce that people buy to eat in the grocery store is dependent upon bees and beekeepers to pollinate the crop, Brighton said. Bees are an important part of our agriculture, and we need to be concerned about them. Brighton said that for every follow on social media, Honey Gardens will donate $1 to ongoing research for improving the health of honeybees. So let's everyone real quick pause this podcast and go to Honey Gardens and like, some of their social media, mm-hmm. because it sounds like that's a worthy cause to get behind.
It does.
And you have a little skin in the bee game.
I do. My father and I, mostly my father, keeps bees out in Post Falls. And we actually had a nice pull of honey recently.
Oh, dude, my kid, that jar you gave me?
Yeah.
My kid has been plowing through it like Winnie the Pooh on steroids.
It's really good.
He melted like a whole stick of butter and mixed the two.
Stop. No, he did not.
Whipped it up and has just been slathering it on anything he can get his hands on.
Okay. I mean, I'm happy that he's happy.
Are you not a honey butter fan?
Well, not mixed. Okay. I mean, I guess I am. I just never mixed the two before.
Go home.
Like,
and do
you
it.
Put butter on the toast first and then you put honey on the toast.
Oh, you're going to go home and try something that's going to blow your mind, sir. Okay.
I don't need to be mixing butter into things.
Oh! Just kidding. I don't need to mix butter.
All right, moving on. Sunday, August 15th headlines, the less obvious property tax pain. This is by Madison Hardy. Of course, it's by Madison. Let's write about taxes, Madison.
Maddie and her taxes, man. She's a killer.
Madison's just all about the tax beat. Ralph Wheeler doesn't feel bitterness when the property tax bill for his home arrives in the mailbox. Quote, "It's disappointing," he said softly while sitting down for an interview with the press. Wheeler wasn't referring to his dues. What upsets the 89-year-old, he said, is that his money goes towards services and infrastructure that disrupt what Wheeler cherishes most, North Idaho's natural resources. Quote, "It's almost devastating to see what is happening to us here," he said. Like many property owners throughout the panhandle, the assessed market value of Wheeler's Spirit Lake home has grown dramatically. Wheeler built the house himself and finished the construction in 2000. At the time, his 3,000 square foot, three bedroom, three bath home was appraised at about $86,000. Wow, what a times fly. According to his 2020 Kootenai County assessment, the home's valuation is up nearly 500% over 20 years to $487,912.
Ayo!
Boy, oh boy. Trailing behind the assessment value is Wheeler's property tax bill, which has seen highs and lows. 2018 was the most notable increase, jumping 25.5% from $4,904.68 to $6,156.28, according to county documents. After receiving the bill, Wheeler wrote the county treasurer to express why he was upset. Part of the letter, which Wheeler provides to the press, spoke about his financial shock. However, most of the letter highlighted Wheeler's beliefs that, quote, "those causing this increased need for more tax money should be the ones providing the funds. Those people," he wrote about, "are the developers and new residents who require more," quote, "roads, traffic controls, schools, and associated support for this growth." Continuing that quote, "no one seems to realize that this rapid increase in all of this is destroying the various natural resources that cause people to live in North Idaho." Couldn't agree more, Wheeler. Wheeler's 2018 letter said, "these people and the new people that they caused to move here are the ones that should pay for all the support needed as a result of this invasion." Well, that's a little extreme on that last part, but definitely agree with the first part. Despite being 89 years young, Wheeler continues to work as a forester for agencies and independent landowners. Spending the brunt of his life outdoors, 43 of those years in North Idaho, has been a blessing, Wheeler said, but it also means he's seen firsthand how the landscape has changed. Boy, I'm starting to sound like him now. And he's 89. I'm only 28, and I've seen dramatic shifts in how the area looks. Yeah. So I definitely feel his pain. I definitely do. All right, moving on. What else we got, Josh?
Moving on, wolves have to be managed. This is by Bill Bewley. When Brad Corkill talks about a camper in Ovando, Montana. A camper being a person, not a recreational vehicle in this story. Because I was just really trying to figure out how the camper got killed by a grizzly bear. But when Brad Corkill talks about a camper in Ovando, Montana, recently killed by a grizzly bear, he wants people to understand something. Quote, "this was not in the wilderness, not in some high mountain camp," he said. "It was in a small western Montana town frequented by visitors, a place where fishing and hiking are popular and where Highway 200 runs right through it." Quote, "the point that needs to be made, populations are increasing and habitat is shrinking," Corkill said. "These kinds of encounters are going to become more and more frequent." Then he adds, "it's going to be the same thing with wolves." Corkill served 8 years on the Idaho Fish and Game Commission and recently retired. But even leaving that post this year, he still worries about what could happen to the state's wolf population with the passage of Senate Bill 1211, which increases the season on wolves and the ways they can be killed. Corkill fears it will lead to lawsuits that may wind up before a judge who may issue a moratorium on Idaho's wolf management, and that could lead to a dramatic increase in the number of wolves by several hundred in a few years, he said. It's speculation, he said, but a legitimate concern. Quote, it's going to happen if these animals are not managed, Corkill said. They have to be managed. The danger now is that we may lose our ability to manage these animals if they're relisted. Last month, 10 groups filed notice of intent to sue the state of Idaho to challenge the state's new wolf hunting laws. They argue the state's authorization of an unlimited season and expanded methods of killing wolves is likely to result in incidental trapping and snaring of federally protected lynxes and grizzly bears, violating the Endangered Species Act. Quote, the Idaho legislature's latest assault on wolves introduces a new killing paradigm not seen since the 19th century, said Ben Scrimshaw, an Earth Justice attorney. Idaho Governor Brad Little signed Senate Bill 1211 in May. The goal is to reduce the state's wolf count by about 90%, from 1,500 wolves to about 150, in order to reduce attacks on livestock and boost deer and elk herds. Representative Ron Mendive said Idaho's wolf problem is severe. Quote, something needed to be done, and we have moved toward, he said. There's always the risk of lawsuits, and we can't let that paralyze us either, Mendive added. We have to do what's right. I always get saddled reading those stories, and they just really upset me.
I know. Because, I know you do.
At the end of the day, there's no sport in it. And yeah. these dudes go out there and they're like trigger happy and snaring stuff. And now we have to worry about them snaring things like lynxes and bears and things that they're not intending to get. And they're going to get them. And then they're going to come by and see them and they're going to go, well, it's how am I going to get it out of the snare other than to kill it unless they call Fish and Game and do the right thing? But let's be honest, human nature tells me that the odds of that happening are pretty slim.
Right.
So I don't like it. And reducing a wolf population by 90% when we were the ones that
sounds like a lot.
When we were the ones that grew the wolf population. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Just weird to me.
I agree. Have you heard about the Dave Smith Adoption Program? Every month, Dave Smith Motors is sponsoring a dog from Shoshone Pet Rescue and a cat from Silver Valley Cat Wranglers and covering the adoption fees 100%. This month, they are sponsoring Esme, an 8-month-old female dog who is ready to learn and play. She has been learning her manners, but needs someone to work with her more. For more information, please contact Shoshone Pet Rescue at 208-512-3401. Moves us into Monday, August 16th headlines. Birdie's Blossoms Keep Her Blooming. This is by Ellie Goldman Hilbert. Roberta Birdie Smith may be 86, but she's not about to slow down. Nestled in the middle of central Post Falls Prairie, she spent the last 5 years transforming the 2.5 acres into a wonderful wonderland of flowers, art, and outdoor vignettes. Quote, this was nothing until about 5 years ago, said Smith. Today, the yard is richly adorned with a plethora of perennial and annual blooms. Snapdragons, daisies, poppies, roses, sunflowers, succulents, evergreens, and more. Smith likes to stay busy, and busy is an understatement. Besides raising all of her own seedlings and tending to her yard daily, Smith is a self-taught painter. She creates intricate paintings on all kinds of found objects and ceramic figures. The list doesn't end there. Also an avid baker, Smith makes her own chocolates and caramel from scratch. Quote, I've got too much ambition, Smith said. My mind goes wild. Smith's art pieces are sometimes done on old milk tins, metal cookie trays, or slabs of wood. She often finds things for nothing and transforms them into art. Her garage studio, she said, holds things that she has collected for years. Stencils, paints, instructional booklets, and of course a myriad of brushes and tools. Her walker itself is a receptacle for tools, with gardening elixirs, shovels, trowels, and gloves spilling out from beneath the pocket under the seat. Quote, I just love being busy, Smith said, explaining that her constant activity has helped her overcome tragedies. Quote, life is in your hands, Smith said. I look at the past and say, I can't change it. I've got to be happy. That's probably why I'm still alive. What a nice story.
That is fantastic.
Somebody keeping busy in the later years. I appreciate that.
Moving ahead to Tuesday, today, August 17th, headline, Trustees Debate Mandating Masks by Hannah Neff. Coeur d'Alene School District board trustees, parents, and community members were split over whether masks should be mandated as part of the school's reopening plan. The special board meeting of the Coeur d'Alene School District on Monday evening was well attended by parents and community members with opposing views who held signs indicating their position on masks. Disagreements were exchanged as attendees entered the building. Speakers received boos and cheers, and at one point a man was willingly escorted out after disrupting the meeting by verbalizing his opinion after being given a warning. Discussion centered on whether the approved draft reopening plan should be modified because of a rise in COVID-19 cases and the new Delta variant. Board Chair Jennifer Brumley, Trustee Tambra Pickford, and Trustee Casey Morris-Rowe all spoke against mandating masks but recommended wearing masks as a personal choice. Trustee Lisa May advocated for a universal mask policy, and Trustee Rebecca Smith asked for more middle ground on the matter. Quote, nobody is mandating masks, but that's what we're being asked to do, Brumley said. I am not at that place, at a place that I think it is what is best for kids. Dr. Christine Hahn, medical director for the Idaho Division of Public Health, spoke with the board over Zoom and gave her recommendations for reopening, including vaccinations, social distancing, and masking because of the rapid rise in cases in the past month. Nicole Pikarski, director of school health services, and Dr. Sean Hawker, superintendent, shared their concerns over overcrowding at Kootenai Health caused by a rise of COVID-19 patients. Pikarski said Kootenai Health has 80 COVID inpatients with 32 ICU patients, but only 26 ICU beds. Quote, Kootenai Health asked, we share with you, please respect the Delta variant. It is different, Pikarski said. And Kootenai Health cannot care for your children. They do not have 27 pediatric ICU beds. Students requiring hospitalization will need to be sent to Spokane. And when Spokane is full, they will be sent to Boise. And they will be sent to Seattle and anywhere else that they can get your children. Hawker said he encourages following the experts' advice and voiced concern over issues that may arise from lack of staff or staff being out with COVID-19. Quote, if your hospital is already at overcapacity and then it's still 3 weeks before school starts, I think that unknown is what I want to try to be prepared for, Hawker said. I don't believe that we should do nothing and then just react to whatever might be, because I think that reaction could be the fact that by then we have to close down a school or a whole district and have had kids go online for a few weeks full time. So this is a tough issue because where do you stand when it comes to you're looking at the writing on the wall,
yeah,
and going, all the experts are saying, hey, we need to do this, and being just fully aware that they're telling you to do it preemptively. Mm-hmm. They're telling you this could happen. Mm-hmm. And people going, it's preemptive. Yes, they know that.
Mm-hmm. But that's the point.
But people seem to be going, well, why would we do anything preemptively? What if it turns out to be nothing? I always get lost when people use that argument, because if it turns out to be nothing, then what damage was done?
Well, and it's not like a situation where we are over. Well, okay, let me rephrase that for a second, because definitely the things have been, I mean, it's the media, mass media, it's job. The more national ones, it's their job to kind of publicize things and blow things out of proportion a little bit to make headlines. But when it comes to this, I mean, we've seen what spikes in COVID can do. And we've seen what the age populations that affect it, largely older folks and the unvaccinated. So we've seen what that happens. And I think, I don't know, maybe it's personal bias because I am vaccinated. I'd be okay with more vaccine mandates than mask mandates.
I think, and that's, I think it's going to end up coming down to, you're going to have to pick one or the other. Mm. And I know people are.
Well, and that was what it was originally presented as. It right. was originally presented as, get the vaccine, you don't have to wear a mask anymore. Yeah. And just, again, I said it on a podcast with Madison before. That was just, I mean, from a purely selfish standpoint, like, I'm like, yes, I'm sign me up for that, because I am done wearing this mask. I'm done. Right. I'm done with the mask argument. I'm done with, you know, talking with people on one side or the other of it. Either they're, you know, fervent wearing their mask in their car, which is ridiculous, or they're, you know, fervent, I'm never going to wear a mask. Both extremes are ridiculous. Right. And I was tired of that. So I got the vaccine so I could just step away from that argument altogether.
I think at this point I'm struggling with, because I'm vaccinated too, and I am definitely in the group that probably is doing pretty well. The Moderna vaccine has been the one that's been shown to be like 96% resistant to the Delta variant or something like that.
I've only got the J&J that's 50, and I'm doing good too.
Right, right. And there's also then, like, I had COVID in December. There's a natural antibody there.
Sure.
So I'm really in a very
good, Yeah.
I'm in a very good spot. My family's Pfizer, which has a little bit of a different reaction, but collectively we're good. And I'm going, at the end of the day, if you're refusing to get vaccinated, the least you can do is try to be a part of the solution, because at the very end of it, if it didn't help, at least you tried.
Sure. And that opens up the old argument that we've been saying on this show for a while of like, look, the realities of it are, like, let's not go back into the mass hysteria. Like, this is not the bubonic plague. This is not, you know, it's not that level of stuff. It definitely affects, statistics show that it affects certain people more than others.
Yes.
Age groups more often than, you know, it's not like, you know, it's not ethnicity or sex.
Yes, it's not sickle cell anemia.
Yeah. It's not anything like that. It's age. Like, it's age. Like, it's this, age. This, the people age who are
compromised immune system.
Agreed. Yeah. Yeah, previous existing conditions kind of thing. Those folks, but I mean, it's like over 90% of the people who, you know, usually pass from COVID-19 related symptoms are over the age of 65.
Or have something else incredible.
It's amazing how higher the numbers go if you just lower that to the age of 60.
You know what though? I know people though that have had, you know, a friend who had a mother with dementia who got COVID and she died. And that was the thing that...
Yep.
Is wearing a mask too much for you to ask to give someone an extra 4 or 5 months with their family member? Like, is it really that much of an inconvenience when you go into the grocery store or if you're a kid going to a school?
Well, and all the more reason for those old people, those people that are in the at-risk category, to get vaccinated.
Right.
My 91-year-old grandmother is vaccinated and also got COVID. And thankfully, she was just a little tired.
Right.
It's good genetics, I guess. I don't know.
It's she's lived to be 93. So
yeah, she's doing pretty good.
Right.
But she got the vaccine, and now because of it, I mean, I can see her.
Right.
You know, we're both vaccinated, and it's a good situation.
So it's definitely one of those things where it's going to come down to people having to work together. But I will stress that I do struggle with people who seemingly don't want to work with the other people.
The mass debate is such a rabbit. Again, going back to the original thing I said, the mass debate is such a rabbit hole. I understand for it to be effective, you've got to do a lot of things that even people who are totally supportive of wearing masks don't do. Like, those paper masks, those are disposable. Like, you're not supposed to, those are single use. Right. You're supposed to throw those away after every use. And people don't. We've all been guilty of it. You've walked into a store, you're like, dang, I don't have my mask. So you grab the one that you shoved into, you know, your pocket or something that you were wearing earlier. Okay. Well, technically that mask is now pretty much useless. So, it's when you don't follow the rules, sure. Masks are not really helpful at all. And it's sad, but most people,
you look at like Japan, man, they, during flu season, everybody just wears a mask during flu season. Right. Like, it's not even a thing. And they have the same flu shot technology,
right?
Everything that we have, they have,
sure.
And they just do it because they don't want to get each other sick. And it's not an inconvenience. I think we just get so stuck in this world where in America, we're allowed to do whatever we want under our preconceived notion of freedom. Yep. And so anytime anyone tries to tell us what to do or even recommend something to us, how dare you trample my rights? Help me help you. Like, it's the golden rule. Like, for everyone listening, like, it's that, like, love your neighbor as yourself kind of thing.
It's one of those situations where I totally respect the option to not in either case. While I lean more pro vaccine than mass usage, again, because just more people, vaccines are foolproof, you get it and you don't have to do anything else,
right?
Whereas mass, it requires a lot of effort and people just don't do it.
There's a reason we don't have polio anymore.
Exactly So I mean, maybe that's the only thing that I will say on this, is that to put it
I just think you can't have it. I think you can't have,
get the vaccine, then you have to worry about arguing about masks.
Yeah, you can't have it both ways. You like, either do one or the other.
Yep, I agree. There you go. All right, moving on. Flames of Victory. This is by Hannah Neff.
This is a cool story.
Competing on the show was his dream. Winning it was icing on the cake. Andrew Hall, a Coeur d'Alene resident and firefighter for the city of Spokane, was ecstatic when he learned he won first place on, quote, or not quote, the show Forged in Fire, a competition TV series featuring bladesmiths competing in a three-round elimination match. Quote, I was over the moon, said Hall, a longtime fan of the show. It was everything that I could have hoped for. Really? Does he make cool stuff?
Yeah.
Hall said his goal going into the show was to make a Damascus sword on national television, whatever the result of the competition. Okay, so for those who are unfamiliar, Damascus sword or Damascus steel has those cool, like, reverberating patterns on it, like waves, kind of.
Yes.
They're very cool looking. Very cool. Yeah, they're very cool. Quote, I wanted to prove to myself that I could, Hall told the press. I wanted to go on the show and prove that I could do it just to give myself some validation of my skill because I'm just a firefighter. I worked in my garage. Barrel Full of Mystery aired on the History Channel July 14th, a challenge in which Hall competed with three other bladesmiths in a timed competition to make the most durable weapon with good craftsmanship. In the first round, Hall was given 3 hours to make a Bowie knife blade from horseshoes and high carbon steel. The blade passed the testing for durability, and Hall advanced to round two, where he had 2 hours to add a handle. Quote, I am totally a perfectionist, Hall said. There was a point where things weren't lying quite perfectly on the handle, and I'd hear my wife in the back of my head. She's like, just leave it. Just go. I'm glad because I used every minute of every hour they gave us for each challenge. For the final round, Hall flew back home and was given 4 days to make a woolen sword in his garage workshop. That I'm not familiar with. He chose to make it out of Damascus steel, that I am familiar with, which is layered and melded together, then drawn out and restacked multiple times to create a pattern. The hard work paid off as Hall's sword passed the test of strength and sharpness. Hall received $10,000 prize and champion title. Hall, who shared his work under Flatline Knives, said he's grateful the show gave him some exposure to the craft because he wants to promote the role of the modern blacksmith and blade maker. Outside of his run of fame, Hall uses the craft as a creative outlet to make tools that can be used every day. Quote, I'm just a regular guy, Hall said. I'm a dad, I got two dogs, I got a house I can't take care of, and I got a garage full of very specific tools for doing this, and I love it.
So first off, Walloon sword. So when you think of swords, mm-hmm. you think of knights and you think of swords, broad swords,
yeah, long handle, yeah, with like a claymore kind of
crossbow.
Yeah.
Okay. That is not this. A Walloon sword has a handle. Then it has like the thing that curves up and goes into the hilt.
Okay. So, but is it a straight blade still?
It can be.
Okay.
So
I'm thinking more like French dueling stuff.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
The sword that Will makes at the beginning.
There you go. Okay.
And then if you Google search Damascus sword, the first thing.
So I'm fairly familiar with it.
Damascus swords good quality? And it says, this makes a stainless steel ideal for decoration, but a poor selection for a functional sword.
Mm.
So
the true recipe or technique to make Damascus steel has been lost. People have come close, but replicating actual like Damascus swords from way back when has been a challenge.
Interesting.
Yes. It's not, but it looks very cool.
Cool.
It looks very cool. And they are useful. I mean, they can be sharpened stuff. It's just, no, I'm not. But who's sword fighting nowadays?
Right. The whole thing. It's like, it's very decorative, but yes. It won't be good for a functional sword. Why are you making a functional?
Right. Why do you need a functional sword?
Right.
Why is that necessary?
And if you are part of a group that uses functional swords, please extend me an invite.
And they're super. Some LARPers out there.
Maybe.
There you go. If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Ready Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. To learn more, visit radiobrewing.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
All right.
That moves us into Shoshone News Press headlines for April, August 17th.
Whew.
Oh, boy. So we're going to start with our wildfire stuff here. And that's also our headline for the day. As we learned pretty late in the day, in fact, it changed up our entire front page and messed with my schedule. Oh, it's all about me, right? The Character Complex, or the Deceitful Fire, as the Pritchard Fire is 100% contained. The Deceitful Fire, spurred by wind, went on a 5-mile run yesterday, jumping both Beaver and Pritchard Creeks. And for a little while there, made a straight beeline toward Murray, which prompted all North Fork evacuations of pretty much every community up there, including Pritchard, Eagle, Murray, Beaver Creek, Delta, Shoshone Camp. Pretty much every community up in that area of northern Shoshone County was put under evacuation recommendations. As I learned recently, Idahoans can't actually be evicted unless it's from an order from the governor. That's a fun fact there.
Interesting.
Yeah. So those were sent out. As of today, with the rain that's coming down, it seems like fire crews are doing okay, and the fire is not necessarily heading directly at Murray anymore. But it went on a scary run there, and there's been a few secondary structures that have been damaged, front porches, sheds, that kind of thing. But no homes, and no injuries, thankfully. But yeah, yesterday it was confusing because there was two fires going on, one in Sunny Slopes, and then all the smoke that was coming from the Deceitful Fire. And if you looked at it just right, it looked like the smoke from the Deceitful was coming from the Sunny Slopes fire. And that was not accurate. The Sunny Slopes fire was taken care of fairly quickly, contained it at roughly 2 acres. That one's, I'll get more information on that story actually after the podcast. But, yeah, the Deceitful fire, went on a bit of a run and has prompted massive evacuations. Those evacuations as of this recording are still in place. Probably will be for the next couple days until fire crews can know that they've got a handle on this. As of this recording, I believe that that is currently at 1,089 acres burned and made 5 mile run and grew over 3,000 acres past Beaver Creek. It's currently at, I believe the last estimate was 37% contained, but nice. That they might need to reevaluate that.
That is scary.
It's basically moved into a new area. Like everybody where they think it was nestled in that area between Pritchard and Kellogg kind of.
Yeah.
It's pretty much moved northeast from that position. Because everywhere else is not necessarily as bad.
Interesting.
They also had to cut power to protect power lines and whatnot, so there wasn't arcing or danger to crews on the ground. So in addition, road closures include all the passes in the area, Thompson, Kings, and Dobson. The Coeur d'Alene River Road is still open at limited speed as we record this.
And for those of you listening, don't be that person who's like, how far can I go up? Don't go up. Just stay away for a while. The more people that are up there, the more people are in the way. If you don't live up there, stay away from up there.
And it's fairly dangerous at the moment. This isn't like it's on top of the mountain and
this is moving down to like freaking road level.
Oh yeah, it's jumped multiple roads. In fact, the road that connects Pritchard to Murray, it has jumped that road. Which is crazy considering it wasn't even past Beaver Creek.
And those were supposed to be the in-place fire breaks that they were depending on to keep this thing where it was.
But wind conditions made that. I spoke with PIO Carrie Maddox last night.
Love Carrie.
Yeah, Carrie. Shout out to Carrie. It was wind driven. I mean, there were a lot of combinations. The humidity was low. Conditions were dry, drought conditions, temperature wise. And then once you get those direct winds coming in, it was tough.
Yeah.
No, it was tough.
Moving down, Shoshone wins Miller Cup. The 25th annual Miller Cup could have been dubbed the war to settle the score. Fortunately, neither side had enough contempt for that title to be necessary. But in terms of meaningful events, breaking a 12-12 tie was a pretty big deal. It took a heroic come from behind effort, but in the end, Shoshone Golf Club brought home the 13th win for their beloved Big Creek course, their fourth straight cup win. The competition consists of the 12 best players from both Shoshone and Pinehurst Golf Clubs in 2 days of 6 singles matches and 3 doubles matches each day, with simple match scoring determining the winner of each matchup. So Ryder Cup rules for those who are golf fans, and then for those who are not, basically you play each hole as a point, and at the end, whoever has the best score, they get the single point that comes with that.
Gotcha.
It took me a while to figure that out. And then on day two, the people who did like doubles, they go to the singles go to the doubles, vice versa.
Gotcha.
The defending champs are given a half point simply for being the defending champions, which means that Pinehurst would need to win 13 of the matches to avoid a potential tie, which would result in a loss when the half point is applied. The first team to 12.5 points wins the vaunted Miller Cup. Day one was played on the relatively flat grounds of the Pinehurst Golf Course, where the Pinehurst Golf Course team took full advantage of their home course and charged out to a 7.5 to 4.5 lead on the backs of singles wins from Danny Kenyon, as well as doubles wins from Taylor Holstrom and Sean Biote, Hank Roundhorse and Chase Jerome, Archie Roundhorse, and Hogan Samuelson. Day two took the Silver Valley's top 24 golfers to the more mountainous terrain of the Shoshone Golf Club, where the East Siders clamped down on their opposition and won the cup. Brent Clearman, Jesse Bennett, Hunter Guss, Carter Wardwell, and Chad Self all won their singles matches, while doubles teams CJ Kissel and Jordan Cochran, as well as Dan Summerfield and Dustin Christensen, all scored major points to put the final score at 15-9 in favor of Shoshone Golf Club. Quote, "This is something we look forward to every year," said Shoshone Golf Club manager Hunter Guss. "It's a lot of friendly competition, and you just never know what is going to happen when you get the best or the 24 best golfers in the Silver Valley together. It's just a great time that seems to get better every year." The tournament began in 1995 and is called the Miller Cup because of the Miller Beer Company sponsoring the trophies and the tournament in the beginning of the event. This year's teams were... Team Shoshone was made up of Hunter Guss, Hayden Hogemeyer, Jordan Cochran, CJ Kissel, Owen Cotter, Corey Miller, Dan Summerfield, Dustin Christensen, Chad Self, Carter Wardwell, Brent Clearman, and Rocky Therrien. Team Pinehurst was made up of Danny Kenyon, Jay Plohars, Darren Williams, Chuck Wardwell, Cade Finley, Taylor Bush, Taylor Holstrom, Sean Biote, Hank Roundhorst, Archie Roundhorst, Chase Jerome, and Hogan Samuelson. Christensen was named the Miller Cup MVP, and all of his Shoshone Golf Club teammates want to thank him for his hard work and dedication to the event.
Cool.
Good Miller Cup's kind of cool. I don't know if Coeur d'Alene has anything like that. I feel like they have to with all the golf courses there. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Also on our front page, what the huck? Huckleberry Festival.
You're pretty proud of that one, aren't you?
I just want to see how it got printed. I'm more curious about how it got printed. A little bit of smoke wasn't enough to derail Wallace Huckleberry Festival. More than 1,000 people made their way to downtown Wallace over the course of the two-day family-friendly event, and organizers were thrilled with the turnout. While the event is named after the regional delicacy, the main event of Wallace's Huckleberry Festival has to be the 5K fun run that happens on Saturday morning. More than 180 racers signed up for the race, and in the end, Spokane's Chris Daratha took home the championship with a time of 19 minutes 1 second. Closely behind him, though, was Kellogg native Eli Bogard, who finished at 19 minutes 18 seconds. 35 different vendors lined up along the intersection of 6th and Cedar Streets as live music filled the air. Speaking of music, the lineup of live artists, including Wailing, Aaron Jennings, Hardwood Heart, Krista Hoyam, John McGee, Jason Perry, and Severewood, kept festival goers entertained as they scanned their
way. It's a good lineup.
Scanned their way through the myriad of handmade goods, delectable food items, specialty drinks, and other interesting services. Near the Northern Pacific Railroad, Depot Museum, bouncy houses, and fun inflatable games added a little something for the kids. P.S. Watching two adults run full speed into each other while wearing an inflatable ball will never not be entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
The Huckleberry Hound Competition raised more than $3,000 for the Shoshone Pet Rescue and was won by Sage, an adorable little shepherd puppy from Spokane. The only event that didn't happen was the Huckleberry Pie Eating Contest, which was canceled due to the rise in COVID cases. COVID claimed the event last year as one of its many civic casualties, but this year, as things have adjusted, it was important to do whatever was necessary to try and pull the event off, and you could tell that that effort was appreciated. Quote, "It was just such an enthusiastic and happy return to semi-normalcy," said event organizer Emma Stadahar. Everybody was really glad to be out there. The vendors were thankful. The musicians were grateful for the opportunity to be out there and do what they do. I also think everybody's just really enthusiastic to be involved in races again. So I think a lot of that contributed to creating a great event with a great turnout. I know a lot of people were just extra happy to be among other people again. Full race results can be found at wallacehuckfest.com.
Cool. It was a good time. I was down there too.
Yeah, I was down there for a little bit on Saturday. I saw them setting up on Friday. I actually had an interview at like 10 that morning and was running a little bit late and did not realize that an office located on Cedar Street would be next to impossible to get to. And then finding parking, because all the vendors were parking in the closest spots, I ended up having to park down by the sheriff's office. When I thought I would make my meeting with about 5 minutes to spare, I ended up walking in about 5 minutes late.
Gotcha. Well, that's unfortunate.
It's all right. They were pretty cool.
All right. That takes us into what's happening. That's brought to you by Watts Appliance. Watts Appliance has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Life for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding the appliances and the brands they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst.
And what's happening is going to take us back 111 years.
I think I have an idea of what you're going to be talking about, Josh.
Another time that was not great, but coming out of the Wallace Minor for the Thursday, August 25th, 1910 edition, 50 lose lives in forest fires through district. Subhead, part of Wallace destroyed by flames, causing damage estimated at over $500,000. Terrible experiences of men fighting flames. Let's zoom in on this. Each party arriving in town or reaching points of communication reports loss of life and terrible sufferings endured. But every crew has its hero, some of whom unhappily forfeited their lives in the effort to save their fellows.
Oof. This is the big burn, 1910.
Yeah. Some of whom unhappily. I don't know anyone who happily forfeits their life. Mm-hmm. Bravely.
Bravely.
Courageously.
I was just about to say courageously.
Happily.
I don't know happily. That's strange.
Yeah. Once more, the Coeur d'Alene country has been visited by disaster. The extent of the damage done cannot yet be ascertained, but while large in the aggregate, will not fall very heavily on individual corporations. And within a few weeks, mining will resume in its normal condition. The heaviest property loss in the city of Wallace, where the fire swept one end of town, reducing to ashes almost every building in its path and leaving only here and there mute evidence of what was formerly a prosperous place of business.
Wow. Wow.
That was dire.
That was.
What calls, however, for our utmost sympathy is the human suffering caused by the many forest fires. Some of the firefighting parties have been cut off from communication, and their condition being unknown is all the more terrifying. Gradually, relief parties are reaching those cut off, bringing medical aid, provisions, and more necessary still, that touch of humanity which we so crave in times of death and disaster.
Wow. They had a fun way of talking about things back then, didn't they, Josh?
My Lanta, we're going to save this one. We might have to...
We need to frame that one.
We might have to re...
Good find, Jordan. Shout out to Jordan Thomas. Yeah, she found that one for us.
We might have to retype that one. There's no byline on it, which back in the day, they didn't really do that.
Yeah, they didn't really.
But it might be worthwhile to run that story again on... do we have a paper on the August 25th
edition? I think Jordan's writing something up.
Of course she is.
It's her third... It's the third week of the month.
Why wouldn't she?
Mm-hmm. Restoring your smile, restoring your confidence. Complete Dental Care delivers quality dental care and complete satisfaction with state-of-the-art technology. They guarantee a positive dental experience, a bright smile, and restored confidence. Schedule your appointment today. Call 208-682-4540. Complete Dental Care is located at 418 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. To learn more, visit CompleteDentalNW.com. Unless it's on a Friday.
Unless it's on a Friday.
Oy. I got you, Josh. All right, that moves us into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines out of Sandpoint for Saturday, August 14th. LPSOD OK's bid for buses with seatbelts.
That's Lake Pend'Oreille.
Lake Pend'Oreille School District.
Yeah, and they have that. They have the. So that's a direct copy. They have the letters wrong in the title.
LPOSD.
They had LPSOD.
Oh, LPOSD. That's what we were going for.
So Lake Pend'Oreille School District.
Yes, there you go. Okay. This is by Emily Bonsant. The Lake Pend'Oreille School District accepted a bid for 3 new school buses with 3-point seat belts at its August 10th Board of Trustees meeting. Back in my day, we didn't even have seat belts on our school buses. That's not in the story. That was a character that I was doing. Quote, having seat belts on our buses is just the next step in improving safety for our students, said Trustee Gary Seppinger. The LPOSD had 3 competing bids for 3 school buses and school buses with seatbelts. The bid from Harlow's Bus Sales with 3 buses, including seatbelts, was chosen for $116,221.07 per bus.
Dang.
That's a hefty price tag. The price per bus would have only been $111,553.90 without the seatbelts.
Suppiger
made a motion to accept the bid from Harlow's bus sales with the added three-point seatbelts. Trustee Lonnie Williams seconded the motion. Suppiger said he was relieved to have such competitive bids this year for buses with seatbelts. The district goes to great lengths every day to with its resource officers and drills to make buildings as safe as possible, said Suppiger. Its buses should be no different. Quote, if our mission is education, then our prerequisites to education is safety. We, the Board of Trustees, went to great lengths to determine during the pandemic for safety for our students, he said. The motion passed unanimously.
Good. I wonder if these are buses, like seatbelts for everybody?
Yeah, like in the seats, student seats.
And they say 3-point, so is that like shoulder ones?
Mm-hmm.
I would assume so. Not like a harness.
Yeah, like 3 points. Boom, boom, boom.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Not like lap belts, like 3-point harnesses.
Right.
Yep.
Bonner General Hospital starts second phase of parking lot. This is also by Emily Bonsant. The second phase of Bonner General Health's parking lot project begins August 16th with a projected completion date of September 10th. The first phase of replacing the front parking lot at Bonner General Health is completed. The project is implemented in two phases so services could be provided, said Kristen Carlson, marketing specialist at Bonner General Health. The north portion will be open for patient parking as construction switches to the south portion of the parking area, Carlson said. Traffic will enter the south entrance and exit out the north exit. Overflow parking will be available in the employee lot directly across from the construction area. Quote, parking spaces will be temporarily marked in the new portion of the lot with permanent marking completed at the end of the project, said Carlson. Quote, there will be traffic and parking impacts and elevated noise levels throughout the project. Again, we thank you for your continued patience through this process, Bonner General Health official said in a press release. Due to construction, Saturday's outpatient lab will be closed beginning Saturday, August 14th until further notice. The lab will continue regular business hours Monday through Friday. Bonner General Health is a 25-bed critical access hospital and healthcare network of outpatient clinics and services serving Sandpoint and the surrounding region. For more information, go to bonnergeneral.org.
That's good.
I don't even know where Bonner General is.
It's in Sandpoint.
Well, I know that.
Okay.
I just don't like. It's funny because like
I've seen it's cool. They've got like one of those. They've got one of those breezeways like with a walk between like an aerial hallway. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
There's a word for it. But what's that?
Like
a skywalk kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Skywalk.
Yeah.
Is it near the high school?
I don't know.
Because like downtown.
Showing our ignorance of Sandpoint.
I know downtown Spokane or Sandpoint really well.
Yeah, me too.
I know how to get to the high school and the middle school, but I just feel like maybe you pass it on the way to the high school. I've just never noticed. Because there is a couple really spectacular buildings up there.
Sure.
There are.
Guess I've never gotten any medical attention in Sandpoint.
Yeah, so. I've never.
Which
I've,
is a good
I've
thing.
Been to the Bonner's Ferry Hospital before.
Okay.
But I've never been to
Bonner
General.
Don't have time to wait in the drive-thru? Try ordering the McDonald's app and picking up your order without getting out of your car. The McDonald's app is a fast, easy, and convenient way to order all of your favorites, including the new crispy chicken sandwiches. Try the new crispy chicken sandwich, the spicy chicken sandwich, and the deluxe crispy chicken sandwich today at your locally owned and operated McDonald's at 820 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it.
Loving it. Moving ahead to today, August 17th, up there at the Bonner County Daily Bee, hot temps fuel Trestle Creek Complex fire growth. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. As expected, dry and hot conditions over the weekend brought an increase in fire activity on the Trestle Creek Complex, fire officials said Monday. Located 4 miles north of Hope, the fire has now burned 6,051 acres and is just 5% contained. While the conditions resulted in the fire's growth, control lines on the fire's western and southern flanks are performing as expected, said Jess Harvey, a public information officer for the Nevada Type 3 Incident Management Team overseeing the complex. In addition to containment efforts on the western and southern flanks, Harvey said crews also are keeping a close eye out for spot fires. Quote, we are continuing to build the fire break along the westernmost side of the fire with equipment and inserting crews to build line in steeper locations and along the south side, Harvey said. The northern end of the fire along Trestle Creek saw some spotting, moving the fire a little further north. The mastication or mulching of forest fuels along the roads and previous preparations have been successful in helping slow the fire's movement, he said. Quote, crews are closely monitoring that and directly engaging where possible, Harvey added. Crews have been working on the southernmost edge of the fire along Trestle Creek, he said. In addition, they have checking They have checking the hose lays and pumping systems in the area. Quote, they will continue to test them to make sure everything is ready in case they are needed in the coming days, he said. So, pardon me there. It sounds like they're not necessarily making progress, but they're not losing ground.
Right.
So
hopefully with the weather,
the exact opposite of what we dealt with yesterday here in Shoshone County.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And just so people know, we had a really good interview, a few weeks back with Sam Gibbons with the Forest Service. And if you want to kind of understand, just some basics and fire knowledge and how they handle it, go back and listen to that episode, because when they talk about fire containment, when they say 5% contained, that doesn't mean that there's still 95% of the fire is burning out of control. Mm-hmm. It just means that they're comfortable. They're and on a scale of 1 to 100, they're 5% comfortable with where the fire's at.
Correct.
It's yeah. not that it's burning out of control. They are very much on top of it. It's just, that's their level of comfort.
Right.
So please be aware that when we give containment numbers, it's not this thing. So like the Character Complex fire being 37% contained, they're not quite saying they're 50-50 on it, but they're getting close. And with the weather today, I think it wouldn't surprise me to see that number probably bump up in the next few days.
Oh yeah. I wouldn't be surprised either.
By the end of the day even.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly.
Well, this was a monster of an episode, sir.
It is. It's been a long one, so let's wrap it up. Everybody, thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, ShoshoneNewsPress.com, BonnerCountyDailyBee.com, or TheBonnersFerryHerald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, whether that be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts,
Spotify,
Pandora, Player FM.
Shout out to Player FM.
Shout out to Player FM. You guys are the real heroes. Make up a lot of our listeners. Please like, follow, or subscribe to us, whatever is appropriate in your particular circumstance, so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And please leave us a nice review. It helps us get discovered. And if you go to any of the places that we talked about on advertising, please mention us. They'll probably give you a nice discount.
There might be a perk.
Yeah, and it's a win-win for everybody involved. So beautiful. Thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you on Friday.
And once again, we'd like to thank Bank CDA for this episode. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local? You want flexible? You want Bank CDA. To learn more, please visit bankcda.com.
Okay, now we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.